Let me tell you about something new. A new show called G's Power.
G's Power.
Real talk for real saints.
Are you ready?
And it's for real.
Welcome to G's Power Hour, live every weekday at 11:30 a.m. on Never Had It So Good Entertainment Network. Your host, G, will bring you informative and entertaining guests and a variety of topics in a way that you can absorb and enjoy. Listen in weekdays and call in at 516-387-1944. We love interaction. All shows can be downloaded if you miss one or found on iTunes the next day. G's Power Hour is powered by Never Had It So Good Sports Media Network.
G's Power Hour.
Yeah.
Well, good morning, brothers and sisters, kings and queens, angels and saints, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. Glad to have you with us. Want to thank all of our guests from yesterday. That was a really, really interesting interview yesterday. And today we're going to have on our economist. We missed having him on last week. Want to get an update. That's going to be later in the hour at noon. In the meantime, I wanted to bring on my friend Stephanie Dukes because we wanted to talk a little bit about the whole cruise mess. Good morning, Stephanie.
Good morning, Lady G, and good morning to your listening audience. How are you doing
today? How are you doing? I'm good. I'm all, you know, always great when you're on. So, yeah.
Oh, thank you. I'm doing good. It's a
good.
Little busy, man. If you don't get up early and get out there and get things done, and drink plenty of water because the heat will dehydrate you very quickly today.
I'm telling you, even with because it's going to tax your air conditioner on your car. I'm going to tell you that right now. So you better juice her up as well, too. So today, according to this article, I'm going to try to post it. Florida fight with CDC over cruise ships heads to court. State of Florida hoping a federal judge in Tampa will put a stop to the CDC's cruise restrictions on Thursday, which is today, when he hears the state request for an injunction. According to the CDC, right now, cruise ships can either run a simulated voyage or cruise lines can require at least 95% of both crew and passengers are fully vaccinated. Several ships are scheduled to sail within the month. Lawyers for the state of Florida says the CDC is treating the cruise industry unfairly and hurting one of the state's biggest industries. It generates billions for the state economy as millions of people typically cruise from one of Florida's ports each year. Right now, the no-sail order remains in effect until November 1st, but Florida filed a lawsuit in April to demand cruise ships be allowed to start sailing immediately. One of the things that I think is the big deal is that Governor Ron DeSantis of Florida has stated is that he doesn't want, I guess, a proof or of being vaccinated or COVID-19 passport, so to speak. And I have to say, and the reason I wanted to talk about it, because I'm just putting it out there, I'm for it. I'm for having some sort of cruise vaccination passport, I don't see what the issue is. And the reason I say that is because, okay, when you get ready to, and I have to say, it's been ages, I tell you, since I've been on a cruise. But when you go on a cruise, there's so much stuff that you have to do anyway. You have to get a passport if it's an overseas cruise. Anything outside of our waters, you know, even if you hit international waters, you need to have a passport. That
right.
means you got to go take a picture. That means you have to have a birth certificate or forms of ID in order to get this passport. That means having to renew the passport every so often. And passports are not cheap, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But that's one of the things that you have to do. The other thing is, sometimes, depending on where you're going, you have to get vaccinated.
That's
or,
right.
Or you have to have proof of vaccination. for mm-hmm. a variety of other types of diseases.
That's right.
Okay. If you're going to a place where you have to, let's say you're going to get off and you're going to go spend currency, a lot of times you're either getting, I don't know if they do traveler's checks anymore, but a lot of times you have to either, you know, get your currency changed, or you have to, I guess, have a card that is accepted in other countries.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You have to line up your medication. If you're on medication, you know, you have to either line up your medication or make sure that you can take your medication or make sure that you can get your medication somewhere else, you know, that's
yeah.
approved. Okay. So it's not just packing up a suitcase and heading on the ship. So this, to me, this whole thing in terms of getting vaccinated and having proof of vaccination is probably easier to me than any of the other stuff that I just mentioned. So what's your opinion on this, Stephanie?
I agree that there are other things that we do have require vaccinations for that they are mandatory, such as even going to school. We require, you know, that our students and children be vaccinated. Or if you don't want to do that, we do have the right to teach them at home, homeschooling, religious reasons. But one of the things I found that was really interesting was earlier in the week, there was an article about, I think it was just yesterday, excuse me, the cruise passenger that tested positive for COVID-19 in Italy. And
mm-hmm.
the cruise line MSC is, you know, been doing cruises on and off in Italy. But one of the things, they don't require that you have the COVID-19 or, you know, passport. But what they do require, you know, there's other ways. You don't want to have that? Okay. They say that then you must be tested 96 hours before you for the departure for COVID-19. Then once you embark, you have to take another test, and then you have to take a third test during the cruise. Now, I don't know which one you like, whether to have show the vaccination card or have someone swabbing up your nose three different times to go on a cruise.
Really?
But that's
yeah.
how they were able to detect that those two passengers were asymptomatic. When they took their 96-hour test, it was a negative. But uh-huh. when once they embarked and took the test, they found that, you know, they had the virus, that the virus was a part of them. You know, a lot of there's a misconception that just because I have been vaccinated, the disease will not touch my body. It will be a host in your body. It just says that you will not get sick or be as sick, and hopefully you will not die from it. But there, you know, we know already that if you are taking certain medicines or if you have certain immune system problems, there's a great chance that you still may become critically ill from this and the slim possibility of death. Now, I'm not a gambler, so I don't like to roll the dice.
No, not with your
with
health anyway,
eye.
Especially.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, there are other cruise lines that are dealing with it a little differently. And I do remember a friend of mine, well, she wasn't on a cruise, but she just flew to Hawaii, and they had to take the test, but it was a different test that Hawaii required. And she and her family had to have that test before going over there. And you remember in the news, there were two other great cases in the news. There was another case where a family, an American group of moms, took their daughters down to the Caribbean islands for graduation, remember? And the mother, while they were there, she tested, when they were getting ready to leave, I think they had to have a test to leave. And she came, they found, no, you cannot get on that flight because you're now COVID positive. And she was like, no, but I had my test. I was negative. Somewhere along the line, she developed COVID-19, and she ended up having to stay for another, I don't remember exactly how long, 7 to 10 days, before they quarantined her in a room, delivered her food every day. And they had been tested and was, you know, shown the negative. So maybe, you know, maybe Gretchen, the passport may not be the thing. The thing may be just, hey, test them before you leave, once you embark, and then while you're on there too. But the danger is, you know,
I mean, because one of the things that I thought about is that someone could present some false documents.
Mm-hmm.
I hate to think that. Yeah, that could happen as well.
Yes. And, you know, the danger is if you do not make sure people have been vaccinated to cut down on, you know, the chances of catching it, you do run the risk of infecting a lot of people. Think about before COVID-19, when those cruise ships was returning in here with people, was a large number of people were ill. And they were having to clean down the cruise ships. And, you know, I don't remember what they actually said that virus was all about. But people were sick, come to their rooms. I don't
They've had these noroviruses in the past, Norwalk virus. That's one that they've had before, as well as I think they may have even had Legionnaires in the past as well. But in any case, it's just a matter of, well, first of all, I do think, like I said, I do believe in vaccine. But, yeah, maybe there should be some other tests, like, especially if it's one of those cruises where you're disembarking and getting back on the ship, maybe, you know, get tested before you go off the ship, get tested before you come back on. I don't know. That's a lot of testing.
No, that's right. I've only had it done twice, and I did not really appreciate that swabbing up my nose. The first time, oh, man, and I think on my campaign website page I posted, because we were able to take the picture during that time, so we had a video done of me doing that to encourage everyone to practice, you know, go get tested so we can know, so you can, you know, watch your behavior. This was before we had complete lockdown. But that was not comfortable at all. And then I had another one done right before, I will forget what the event was. Oh, I had to have surgery. So when I had surgery on my knee, I had to go in and have another COVID test done before I went into the hospital. So, you know, there are situations where the test is being required.
Was that mandatory for you to have before surgery?
Absolutely. They were not allowing me in that. Yes, because there was two things could happen. One, they were protecting the staff, which protects other people, but also protecting me at the going under like that. My body, my immune system now is weakened just with the fact that, you know, I'm in a comatose state, a semi-comatose state there, and there's a wound, there's an incision being made in my body, and we don't know how this virus will, you know, attack this incision. So my immune system has been compromised. My body is going to act different just along with that cut. My body is going to say, oh, I'm being attacked. What's going on here? And it's going to start acting and get into a protective stage. And I didn't need anything that was going to hamper that healing process, which, you know, a lot of times just from the normal procedures, you can catch a cold, an infection. So much can go wrong. So that's the medical profession way of decreasing and lessening our chances of something going wrong. And I was glad to take it. I was not trying to let something happen to my respiratory system, because think about it. When that comatose state, they put, I don't know the exact medical term for it, but when they put the mask over you and it's controlling, your breathing is being controlled by, you're hooked up to a machine for oxygen and make sure you're breathing properly. All that's your respiratory issue, and COVID-19 is going to attack in that area. So if you have it, and they go and put you to sleep, do you understand what can actually happen to you to your respiratory system? Oh, mercy. Yeah. That's labor. Labor-intense breathing. You could probably not even recover and be on a ventilator till your family decide to take you off. And that's not my choice.
Mm-mm. Not at all. Not at all. We are talking about the court battle that's going on today between the state of Florida and the CDC regarding the cruises, the cruise restrictions, and whether or not there should be, I guess you could say, a vaccine passport. Tell us what you think. The number is 516-387-1944. This is G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment, and we will be right back.
Over the past 60 years, Dove Beauty Bar's superior formula has remained unchanged. But when it comes to beauty, everything changed. Together, we redefined beauty. We said no to stereotypes and yes to every type. We let go of judgments and embraced what makes us unique. We're proud to have been there with you, caring for you every step of the way. Here's to the next 60 years.
Having a wedding, reception, family reunion, planning a banquet, or some other fundraising event. Need to share your knowledge through a workshop or seminar. Or it's a difficult time and you need to plan a wake or repast. Let us help. At our gatherings, let us reduce the stress and make the occasion memorable, treasured. Call our gatherings at 407-968-9387 or email ourgatherings@yahoo.com. Let us help plan your special event.
Good morning. Welcome back to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. I'm here with my friend Stephanie Dukes. We are talking about cruising and the cruise battle that's going on today between the CDC and the state of Florida with regards to a vaccine passport of sorts, or where the state of Florida, Governor Ron DeSantis, has said, no, we're not going to have that. And the CDC has otherwise said that, you know, you can't cruise, officially until, I guess, November 1st. And I think they may be moving that date up, too, as well. I guess my concern also, too, is if I was an owner of a cruise line, the liability that I may take on if I allow a bunch of people to get on my cruise ship without at least having some sort of type of screening. So I don't know if it should be if I'm that person or that company or that entity, is it better for me to have proof of vaccination? Is it better for me to do screenings prior to boarding and having to maybe turn some people away, and what are the costs involved and who incurs those costs for those screenings prior to boarding or even on board? So what are your thoughts, Steph?
The cost, we know business models, that the cost is going to be factored into those tickets. So we are paying for those screenings. You can bet that. So the price of the ticket is going to go up. But also when I look at it and think of it from a business model, get on the other side of it, than from a compassionate consumer, I think about the business part of it, the profit line, that a lot of those ships out there are brand new, you know, a couple of lines that are brand new, and the more they sit, the more the cost, and they are paying for it. So I also would have to look at my liability. If I put those ships back out there to earn their way, and most businesses probably had insurance to pay for that downtime, hopefully. If the insurance companies didn't do them like they do the regular consumers, they were going to cancel you. But I would be looking at my liability, that now that we know this is out there, what are the steps I should take to limit my liability from lawsuits? Because knowingly putting someone in small confinement, knowingly not requiring some type of note to provide a safe environment for my passengers, what is that going to look like in lawsuits? In lawsuits from very many countries. I may end up with a lawsuit from bringing people from America to the Caribbean island, let's just say Jamaica. Will I end up in a lawsuit? So from a business point of standpoint, yes, I would have both of them in place. I would have, you need to have, show proof of vaccination. That decreases it down to, let's say, 70-75%. And then once you're on, or maybe higher than that, it may even take it to about 85%, that of my passengers may be asymptomatic. Then by doing the onboard testing, I'm able then also to catch, like they were able to catch the two passengers out in Italy who were asymptomatic. But nevertheless, they would have been walking around not only infecting people on that cruise, but out in regular, just regular walking around in their communities. So I like the combination of both for that as a business owner. Now, the ticket is going to go up, but people, you know, prices of everything is going up. Houses went up by, what, $39,000. They announced at the end of last month. Everything has gone up because of COVID-19. So we can expect that the industry, cruise industry cost is going up also. And if it's going to go up to save my life, take it up, baby. Take it up.
Now, the other thing I looked at was, I mean, you're talking about the impact on Florida. But, you know, what may be of detriment to Florida might be a boon to some. It's not like we are the only coastal area in the United States where cruises can sail from. I mean, there's the East Coast, all the way up to the East Coast. But, you know, there's Georgia, there's South Carolina, North Carolina, you know, Virginia. You know, there are other places. And in the Gulf, where ships take off from Tampa, then, well, you do have other areas. Like again, you know, you've got Louisiana, you've got Texas. You know, you have other places. And not trying to drive the cruise industry away from Florida, not at all. And people look forward to coming to Florida, you know, because the weather's nice, you know, and it's really, and it's all conducive to, you know, we've kind of, that's our industry, tourism, and we've kind of just made it ours, and people know, you know, things are going to be in place to help them get from point A to point B in terms of flying in or driving in or whatever to Florida to go cruising. But,
you know,
that being said, other areas, even if this gets resolved between the CDC in Florida right now, other areas may be thinking, hey, we can go ahead and maybe take advantage of this and prepare, you know, because there may even be some overflow, or maybe some people don't want to go all the way to Florida, you know, to do the cruise. And there may be other states that might say, okay, we have no problem with the vaccine passport. Come on over.
You know, that is so interesting. Something you just said that made me think that I would hope the person, if I was the consumer and money was not an issue, I would take the cruise that provided all the safeguards. And for the person who money is an issue, they would take the cruises that did not have the safeguard because the tickets would probably be cheaper because it did not include all this testing. I would hate to see that we develop a system that cruising becomes for the have and the have-nots, that those who have money can take safer cruises, can enjoy a better lifestyle because they're in a healthier environment. Mm-hmm. Those who cannot will be exposed to more risk, more health challenges, which go on these cruises and come back in with these infections and then go back to their communities and carry infection. And we have a two-tier system for health that has developed. And I can see that with what you're saying for those states and area that requires it. And if Florida say, no, we got a free for all. And those of us who can afford it and know how to process and make a better health decision, such as we make for food, there's healthier food than there's food that's not so healthy. You can afford to buy that doesn't have hormones in it and does not have pesticides on it, then you're going to be eating a healthier food than the others. And when you talked about that, the choices of being able to go other places and everyone not playing by the same standard, we create the risk of a two-tier system. And now look at the health disparity that will be created from such an event.
Right, right. So anyway, and we've got a few minutes before Paul Shelton comes on. There is a story on Forbes that talks about the first cruise to leave out of Florida in 15 months. It's supposed to is slated to depart Fort Lauderdale on the 26th of this month on a 7-night cruise to the Western Caribbean. And it says by midsummer, 9 of the cruise lines, 15 ships, will be operating out of Florida and other ports. So that is the Celebrity Edge departing out of Fort Lauderdale. So now if you know, you're the first, everybody's eyes are on you, what do you do if this does not go in? Well, let's say this goes in favor of Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, and they're saying, no, you can't have a vaccination passport. What do you do, you know, with a couple of weeks away, a week and a half away, whatever?
I stay home, but right now.
What do you do if you're the cruise line?
Well, the cruise line's going to make their money. They're going to make their money and look at their risk factor. Okay.
So what are they going to do? Are they going to defy the order and say, "Hey, have the proof of vaccination," or are they going to ramp up and do pre-board testing? What do you think?
Up and do the pre-board testing, because if this goes in favor of Florida's government, the state will then appeal it. I mean, the federal government will then appeal it because, you know, right now, the state's law cannot overrule national law, and it cannot be in conflict. Or so, you know, when the CDC says you can run either simulated voyage or at least 95% of both your crew and passengers must be fully vaccinated, I think that the cruise line they're going to make their money either way, but the passengers are going to take a hit, because then to limit my risk as the cruise liner, I'm going to have you sign off that when you know all those documents you have to sign when you're getting on the cruise, there is one more document that I, as the cruise line owner, would have you sign that releases me from the liability.
Now, before we go, I went down further into the article, And so apparently according to this article, and I did post it on the G's Power Hour Facebook page, there was a call on, I guess Forbes talked to someone on May 27th, to Dondra Ritzenthaler, Senior Vice President of Sales, Trade, and Support and Service at Celebrity Cruises. And they said here that they will require documentation of full vaccination from all guests who are eligible. Now, they said this is for everybody, so Florida is a little bit different. They said Florida, because we honor the government, we honor DeSantis, which is, to me, weird because DeSantis is the government, but so is the CDC, I think, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
They said we will still go out with 100% of our crew and 95% of our guests vaccinated, but in Florida, we will not require you to have to show proof of vaccination because we are doing this exactly the right way, which I thought that was kind of interesting. They say they honor the government.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess they don't recognize the CDC as government. So
I honor the government that protects my business. You know, when you're sitting on the business side, that's who you honor. You're trying to say I honor you because that's where I put, you know, politics, that's where I put my money behind, being able to run my business and make money.
Yep. So thanks so much. Really appreciate it. I thought it was a discussion we should have, and we'll be watching today and see what happens with this particular issue. I've been looking forward to going on a cruise for quite a while, so I'm kind of ready, but I can wait.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, and have a wonderful day, and I'm looking forward to listening to your next guest.
Thank you, Steph. Take care. Talk to you soon.
All right.
And when we come back, we will talk with Paul Z. Shelton of Warwick Shore getting an economic update. This is G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment, and we will be right back.
This is Douglas Dobbs of Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service. We have served the Central Florida community for 29 years with quality funeral and cremation services. Honoring all religions and faiths, we have been here for many grieving families. Whether it's a complete funeral service with a burial or a simple, dignified cremation, Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service is here for you. Located at 430 North Kirkman Road at the 408 Expressway, Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service, 407-578-7720. Dobbs. Dedicated to serving our families.
Hi, I'm Tim Garrison. You may know me as Timmy G. Yeah, I know. It's been 2 decades, but I want you to know I'm back in the art with you. And I've got a mix of music that can help you relax and chill out. It's smooth. It's relaxing. It's chill out jazz. The soulful mix of smooth jazz, soul, and smooth R&B. So join me every Wednesday night, 10 p.m. to midnight, on K-Ham Radio.
Are you chilling?
Swiffer Sweeper cleans so completely, you'll never go back to your old broom again.
Now a song for Mary from a Mr. Broom.
Sweepers redesigned to clean corners, and it traps and locks 50% more dirt, dust, and hair than a broom. So go all the way clean. New Swiffer. Clean better or your money back. Guaranteed.
Good afternoon. Welcome back to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. I want to thank Stephanie Dukes again for joining me to talk a little bit about the cruise issue, and we're going to be following what the court decides with regards to whether there should be a, quote, vaccine passport, end quote, available. So anyway, we are going to get an economic update soon from Paul Z. Shelton of Warwick Shore. He is in a meeting, but he's going to join us as soon as he gets out. In the meantime, from the Associated Press, it says the number of Americans applying for unemployment benefits fell again 6th straight week as the U.S. economy reopens again. They said jobless claims fell by 9,000 to 376,000 jobless claims, which is down from 385,000 jobless claims the week before. Number of people signing up for benefits exceeded 900,000 in early January and has fallen and continues to fall since then. They say nearly, let's see, 3.5 million people were receiving traditional state unemployment benefits the week of May 29th, which is down 258,000 from 3.8 million the week before. And they said businesses are reopening rapidly. Now, my husband and I have been having this debate on the jobs, you know, in terms of what's available and what's not. And, you know, we see these signs, you know, we're hiring and stuff. But, and so if you aren't employed, do you go out and take the next job that you see that's posted? And by the way, if you have been out of a job or for whatever reason during the pandemic and are looking, give us a call because I'd like to know how your search is going and what are the determining factors for you now versus what they would have been before looking for a job. So the number is 516-387-1944. That's 516-387-1944 if you want to give us a call. But, you know, I'm wondering, do you, if you've been unemployed and now with that extra cushion taken away in terms of not having to prove that you've, let's say, you didn't have before to prove that you were going out looking for a job and now you do. And I think there's some even additional things, criteria in terms of how to, you know, what you have to prove in terms of going to have find a job. I think it has to do with the proximity of the job, too. There's some changes. I'm going to try to find those and get those posted. What determines for you what job you take? Is it the what they're paying? Is it the type of job? Is it the distance to and from and how you're getting there? And the reason I ask that, too, because even if there's a job and it may be paying more than what you were making before, a lot of stuff has gone up. Gas has gone back up. Food has gone back up. Housing definitely back up. So you know, you have to ask yourself what, you know, can you afford to be selective in choosing what job that you're going to take, you know, whether it fits your, I guess you'd say, profession or former profession, maybe does it fit that criteria? Does it fit? And also, too, right now, unfortunately, you're competing with students that have just gotten out of school. Anyway, we're going to talk with Paul Z. Shelton. He's joining us now from Warwick Shore. He's our economist. Good morning, sir. How are you? Good afternoon, rather. Oh, I thought he said he was here. Anyway, so, but wanted to find out from you what determines now, and especially there's all this extra stuff with, like I said, students from high school and college looking for work, you know, and part of that now not just may not be just for some change to have in the pocket. Part of that now may be to go and help the family out, you know, and some people may be more inclined, some companies may be more inclined to pay a student that doesn't have skills that they have to pay for versus someone that is expecting more for what their skill level is and what they're accustomed to. Paul, how you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you doing today?
Doing well, thank you. I know you're busy. I appreciate you taking the time. So I don't know if you caught anybody. I went through, like, what's been going on with the job numbers and employment numbers, unemployment numbers and everything. What are we seeing? And like I said, one of the my questions is, yeah, there's a lot of we're hiring out there, but, you know, are people in a place where they can be selective in terms of what types of jobs they take? And I'm sure also one of the things that's happening is that even if they take one of those jobs, they're still going to have to take an additional job.
Correct. Yeah, so what we're seeing right now is a structural change in our employment landscape. And we tend to see that whenever you do see shifts in our economic regime and every time there is a significant change in the business cycle, you do have differences in preference and differences in skills, knowledge, and abilities that are valued more greatly or even less greatly during different times of our economy. And we're currently getting to a point where we're seeing that now. I personally have seen the signs, Donald's, and many, you know, restaurants that are paying $15 an hour, telling the individuals that they'll give them daily pay. They can be hired on the spot. And, you know, those things that we didn't see, you know, just a year ago. A year ago, if you were $15 an hour, you may have been maybe possibly a bank teller doing something that was a little bit more of an office setting. But we are seeing that structural change in employment, and we're at a point where those that are unfortunately that have lost their job and they're trying to get back to where they were previously, they may not have the skills that are matching exactly what employers are looking for. So it's kind of shifting them in a structural manner towards accepting jobs that are non-standard, are typically not where they would have been after a 20-plus year career within another industry. Unfortunately, that's where we are as of today. The unemployment numbers on this past Friday are for the month of May represented 559,000 gain in employment, which helped decline the unemployment rate by three percentage points, I should say by 3 basis points or 30 basis points to 5.8%. And so unemployment rate has dropped down a little bit, which is good, but we're getting to a point where we're not seeing the mass hirings. We're seeing some hirings, but we're seeing a lot more job openings that are out there than currently what's being matched for. So I did hear the tail end of your statements there, and I do believe that we're at a point where it may be harder for some individuals to be as picky as desired when looking for employment as of now, at least in the interim, in the intermediate. Possibly when we get on the other side of this and we're fully vaccinated and back to somewhat normalcy in our society, we may see a resurgence or we may see a return to some of those mid-level managerial jobs come back that were paying those mid-level ranges of $50,000 to $90,000 a year, and having those be of higher demand. But I believe you're completely correct when you say that the competition has heightened because we do have a fresh batch of 22, 23, 24-year-olds that are coming onto the market with new skills, new technical skills, I would say, and they can carry out the job. They may not have the historical knowledge and all the years of season that many other employees would have, but that can save a lot of money for the employer when it comes to hiring that person and employing that person as opposed to employing someone that is more seasoned in that position as well. And another factor that weighs into that too, and most organizations don't talk about it outside of the boardroom, but it is definitely discussed inside of the boardroom. As we age, you know, we become more of a drain on the healthcare costs for our organizations. And so that is something that is highly looked at whenever organizations are revamping their benefits packages. They understand if they're heavily weighted with a higher population or older population, then there's potential for risk for going concern of the firm going forward and expenses going forward. So we're at a point right now where, we blame a lot of stuff on the pandemic, this is another case where this can be blamed on the pandemic as an opportunity for corporations to wean out some of the older talent for newer talent.
And the other thing, too, I'm looking at, you know, there's this push to, let's say, increase the minimum wage to, I guess, $15, you know, an hour. Now, though, with all of the competition out there, does that change? Are companies going to be as compelled to offer that higher minimum wage or higher wages? I passed by one place today. It was a fast food Asian restaurant, and they were like, yeah, we're hiring, but they were still like $11 and $12 an hour, you know. But like I was saying, you know, like you were just talking about the new crop of people out here looking for work, and then also with, let's say, kids out of school for the summer, you know, older kids looking for work, there's going to be competition for that, you know, even, you know, for, you know, people looking for that as a supplementary income.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. So there is a lot of competition for that, and it makes it harder for, you know, those employers that are out there trying to find, you know, specific talent or good talent to really even move up, you know, one level from that. So if you think about being able to work at a fast food industry or at a fast food restaurant for $15 an hour, when many CNAs or LPNs that may be in a hospital or a nursing home may be getting $11 or $12, you know, for a night shift. So you see that disparity that takes place there. And so what does that do when, you know, the CNAs have to be bumped up in order to keep them on staff? Will we get to a point where, you know, many industries will, or many healthcare providers will say, we'll just do away with the whole CNA population. We'll no longer employ LPNs, and we'll just focus on RNs. That's part of this whole structural change that we're seeing in the structural unemployment. Because if, when we see that happens, and if that does happen, not saying that it will, but as wages continue to increase, it's not going to be justifiable to a board of directors to pay a CNA exactly the same that you're paying an RN. And so you'll have to keep raising rates, or the only thing that you can do is eliminate one class of employee. So will that employee be able to go back to school and educate themselves to increase their income to meet that standard, or will they fall and have to, you know, switch industries and become structurally unemployed and have to shift to working another job? Or will they desire, you know, to go work at a fast food restaurant where they can make, you know, significantly more? You know, so that's a significant dilemma that many employers are looking at now, and that's essentially going to add to more inflation potentially if we have to keep increasing the wages out there. But it's definitely a problem, and it's definitely something that economists are keeping their eyes on.
Yeah, but I mean, if you don't increase the wages, if you don't have decent paying jobs, people can't afford to live. I mean, here anyway. Because food, I mean, the cost of food have gone up. That's why I'm always encouraging people to, you know, grow a garden. But food has gone up, making people make, in some cases, unhealthy choices, because unfortunately a lot of the time people are choosing cheaper food that may be more filler and less nutritious, you know. Rice,
correct.
Great, you know, rice is a great filler, but I mean, there it lacks in some nutritional value, you know. So, you know, you go to your fast food, and it used to be you had a dollar menu. You don't even have that anymore. But in some cases, it's cheaper and more convenient, you know, to go and do that. Now, I mean, if you really, really work at it, there are ways to get around that. But it's not just that. It's the gas or transportation, whether it's gas or bus, whatever, to go get the food. You know, it's, you know, if the gas is up, to gas to go to the job that pays for the food. and the house, and the house costs more, and the insurance costs more, and what do you do if you don't want to pay people and people are having to say, well, I basically can't afford to live, or I can't afford to live here anyway.
Correct.
So it just seems like it's a catch-22. It's just an endless cycle. Where does it?
It really
stop?
Is.
Where does it break?
And that's the bad part. There is really no one act of Congress or one act of the Federal Reserve or anyone that can really satisfy and solve the issue. Unfortunately, this is something that we've gone through in our economy several times before, and I am sure that, as long as we're in existence, we're going to continue to battle this. When it comes to inflation, there's no sweet spot as to where, wages meet cost of living, unfortunately. And we're constantly chasing one or the other, increasing the wages to meet cost of living, or, trying to adjust our cost of living to meet our wages. But the only thing that we've seen is inflation. Our prices rise. As we got the reading on inflation earlier today, and we see that consumer prices have jumped 5% in the month of May, year over year. Now, you're comparing that to a year ago in May of 2020 when everything was pretty much still closed in our country for the most part. Most restaurants, stores, and things of that nature were not completely open. So, prices were a little lower at that point just because of the amount of economic activity was much, much lower. But this is still the highest reading on inflation, our consumer increase in prices, since the Great Recession, since 2008, actually, before everything really, tumbled down. And then if you go back a little further than that, this is the largest read going all the way back to 1992. So we've seen a significant rise in prices for all consumers, and a big part of that is there's some rise in fuel prices. There's some we can all see the rise in energy prices when we go to the gas stations to fill up our tanks. And something that's here to stay, and the Federal Reserve is not acting upon it right now because they believe that this is going to be dismissive, in future readings, and that this is more so of a transient increase in prices just because of the timing of how everything is working out. And I hope that is the case, because I wouldn't want us to run hot on inflation like we saw in the 70s and 80s in this country. That would not be good for our economy, especially with a lot of people that are still unemployed or structurally unemployed or underemployed, Mm-hmm. So it's a hard scenario. It's hard to tell someone when they've been loyal to a company for 20, 30 years or to an industry for that amount of time and they lose their job. It's hard for them to revamp and restructure those skills to go back and compete with someone that could be half their age, or go back and compete with their children mm-hmm. for the same type of job. So it's a something that I always just preach to everyone: is the more education you have, the better. You should always be learning. That is something that is key. Throughout life, and having more education never hurts you. It can only help you, and more experience can only help you in the long run than the short run. So it's okay. A very tough situation.
But that's another question. That's another cost that has gone up.
Correct.
That's another struggle. Do you think it requires a formal education? And then one of the things, too, is you were talking about the skill you bring to these jobs. Some of these jobs don't necessarily – they have to train on the job anyway. So, and I'm all for a formal education, and I'm all for continuing education. I'm always trying to take a class or learn something new or different or enhance what I do know, or, things change so much. I went to college – a few decades ago. Okay, so what I studied did back then has changed a lot. I have to, you know, I mean, just because I got a degree, you know, though several years ago, I'm just going to say that, doesn't mean that the stuff that I learned was is still as relevant today unless I enhance that with continuing education. There's a cost involved with all of that. So how worth it is it to, and how much debt should you incur to get that education on a job that's not necessarily guaranteed?
Yeah, and that's a good question. That's a good conversation that many individuals and families have to have internally. Really looking at your overall picture, looking at your longevity and being realistic, understanding what your longevity is in today's workforce and what your contributions will be to this workforce, and really is it worth it to re-educate, especially if you're learning something totally new, or enhance your education if it's something that you already have in a particular industry, if you're only, you know, 2 or 3 years or 5 years maybe out from retirement. The other caveat from that is, you know, looking at it from another, you know, spectrum, you know, realizing that, you know, maybe the industry that I chose to get a degree in, I know a good buddy of mine, his degree is in management information systems, which soon after he graduated from UCF, it was no longer offered because they were transitioning away from that particular curriculum and rebranding those skills for something else. So
wow.
That's something that, you know, he realized, and, you know, working in his first several jobs, he went and garnered more certifications and education on something that was kind of similar but totally different. And now he's
mm-hmm.
working more in cybersecurity, which is along the lines but just completely different than what he initially went to school for. So, you know, those are conversations that, you know, those are – family conversations that have to be made, and at all stages, you know, throughout education and life. I discuss those same things with my kids as I do with my wife and her career in nursing, and where she is in her career and what additional education she should consider just to say she wants to be relevant maybe 15 or 20 years from now. Because we never know how things are going to shift. So, you know, that's really hard, especially, you know, when education costs are rising. There is some benefits, you know, if you are with an employer that is providing you with some tuition or tuition assistance or reimbursement to be able to defray some of those costs. And but it is a hard thing. I mean, you can, if you have the assets, reach down to the IRAs and to your retirement accounts and try to make that investment in yourself. But then again, you're taking away from your retirement to do so in some situations. So it's definitely a, like you said before, catch 22 in there.
Yeah. We got a little over a minute left. So what should we be looking at with regards to the economy over the next month?
So over the next month, I think we really should keep our eye on inflation. I know that we're getting into, well, we're in the summer period now, and typically this is when we see energy costs rise, the ACs are blowing, we're, you know, very hot spots all over this country right now. We typically see a lot of people traveling, which we're going to see some more leisure travel take place this year compared to last year. So I foresee us seeing some higher prices. And some higher inflation in our economy over the next 1 to 2 months. But what will be really interesting is how that's going to either taper off or increase over once we finish off the summer, and what the Federal Reserve will do in response to that. If inflation mm-hmm. continues, the Federal Reserve may be, you know, forced to act by going in and raising interest rates and things of that nature, trying to artificially bring or tame down some of that overheating in the market, and then that could be very, very painful for every industry in the market.
Thanks, Paul. Appreciate you taking the time today. Really do, and hopefully talk with you next month, you know, God willing, and hopefully we'll have better news, maybe some stabilization, maybe not so much climbing in terms of prices. So thanks. Celebrating Black Music Month. Have a blessed day. Celebrating Black Music Month tomorrow with Amy Alicia. This is G Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. Be well, be safe, be blessed, and please remember, all real power comes from God. Take care.
Your mouth. Come on. You gotta say something.